Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay. Tonight, the women of San Quentin. We welcome back Norwegian photojournalist Kristin Lissigen, who was our guest after the publication of her first book, The Boy Who Was Not a Lesbian and Other Stories. She's out with another collection of profiles and photographs, this time about the plight of transgender women in male prisons here in the U.S. The Women of San Quentin, Sole Murder of Transgender Women in Male Prisons. Kristin intimately profiles nine transgender women who've been incarcerated in male prisons, being housed with and treated as members of a gender they don't identify with. Surrounded by convicted murderers and rapists, Kristin writes, they're forced to fight for their lives on their way to womanhood inside some of the world's most dangerous prisons for men. She notes that California is home to one of the largest correctional systems in the Western world and consequently one of the largest populations of incarcerated people with gender identity issues. This has many implications, which are detailed by the experiences of the women in the book. Many have been forced to perform sexual acts on other inmates, kept in solitary confinement if they've complained, and been denied access to transition-related health care, even when medically prescribed by a doctor. Tonight, we're happy to have Kristin Lissigen and with also, one of the women who shared her story in Kristin's book, Danielle Tavake. Kristin Lissigen, welcome back to Out in the Bay.
Thank you.
And Danielle Tavake. Did I say that right?
Yes, Danielle Tavake.
Thank you. Welcome to you, too. Thank you both so much for coming in to talk with us. Kris, first I want to ask you, what got you started on this project? When and how did you know you wanted your next book to be about these women?
Well, I didn't plan to make a another book so soon because I had just published The Boy Who Was Not a Lesbian. And then I read a story about Grace from Liberia, who was an immigrant living in San Francisco. And her story about her three deadly attacks in San Francisco, hate crimes, torture because she was a transgender woman and black. When I read the story, I just couldn't believe that I had not thought about that specific topic, because I have been working with on transgender topics since 2003, so almost 13 years. But I never ever thought about what happens to people when they end up in prison. So I thought I needed to learn more about this, and the more I learned, the more shocked I became.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that you had started working on transgender topics in 2003. What was it that interested you at the time?
Well, I was studying BA photography, and I used to work as a journalist in Norway before that. Then I went out to look for I guess cultures that were very new to me, and I met up with people in the gay street in Birmingham called Her Street, and then there I met a 6'3" very tall, beautiful woman called Michelle, and I asked her if we could meet the next day as Rob, because she identified as a transvestite. And the next day she picked me up as Rob, and that was very, very interesting to me. It was very new.
Mm-hmm. Daniela, how did you hear about what Kristin was doing, and what made you want to contact her and trust a total stranger with your story?
The first time I heard it was through TGI Justice.
TGI Justice, what's that?
It's trans.
The Transgender Justice Project?
Variant and intersex.
Okay.
One of the staff members sent me a flyer that Kris put out and asked them to send to the women in prison. And they sent it to me because they figured that it would be something that I would be interested in. And my first instinct is to be a voice for the women that don't have the voice, that to be a part of something that gave us a voice. And so that was my whole backing to it, but then it just opened up to me expressing me for the first time in my life.
As I understand it, Kris, the process with each of the nine women you profiled started with writing letters back and forth.
Yeah.
Tell us how that worked and what you learned from those letters.
Well, I didn't actually go out and look for anybody. So I had the organization in San Francisco, and Janetta Johnson, who is now the director of this organization, and she helped me send out proposals or to send out flyers to people. And so I didn't pick anybody out or anything. They started to write to me very quickly after they got the project proposal. And I kept all the people, I guess, all the people who wrote to me regularly for almost 2.5 years, I sort of included them in the book.
Wow, okay. And Daniela, you have an excerpt from one of the letters that you sent to Chris that you can read part of it to us?
Yes.
That would be great. Now, this is written shortly after you were transferred from Corcoran State Prison to Salinas Valley State Prison in July of 2013. Can you tell us, you know, why were you transferred? Was there a reason, or is this kind of something routine that would come along?
I was supposed to be transferred because it was supposed to be a hub for the women that were in jail in transition, and it was supposed to be a place that provided transgender groups, women in transition groups, and it was supposed to be a place where they allowed us to order makeup, feminine clothes, feminine shoes, and it wasn't that place. It wasn't the place that it was supposed to provide for us, and they called it a hub for the girls in prison.
Okay, fantastic. So then if you can read that, please. Thank you.
So I was transferred to this prison, Cork, because Corcoran wasn't an approved prison for transgenders. Well, I was attacked by this guy three days after I got out of orientation. I wasn't even in Salinas Valley for 3 weeks before I was sent to the hole. My girlfriend Naomi got into an argument with some guy, and he started calling her a faggot. I asked the guy to stop, and then he started calling me a faggot. Anyways, words were exchanged, and then this a-hole and his friends attacked Naomi and I while we were waiting to be released from the dining hall. We all were sent to the hole for participating in a riot. Naomi and I are supposed to be sent back to the yard after our 115s, which is a rule violation, are heard. I pray they hurry and get this over with. I have not shaved my face in 2 weeks. When I look in the mirror, I want to cry. I am forced to wear a beard. We are supposed to shave with clippers on the yard 3 times a week, but the clippers are broken. Apparently, there will not be new ones for another 3 weeks. I appealed this. The horrible thing is, none of the inmates are even appealing this. I don't understand this. I don't even belong in the hole. I was attacked, and I was the one who has all the injuries. It was written up in my favor, but I still shouldn't even be in this place. They're not investigating the fact that the two men who attacked Naomi and I called us faggots. I can't wait to get out so I can put all this behind me. So moving to this horrible prison has not been good thus far.
Okay, thank you very much. You mentioned the hole a few times. What's the hole?
It's administrative segregation, and it's where people who have broken the rules that require segregation time or for their own safety to protect them.
Okay, is that the shoe, what they call that in some cases?
That's security housing unit, and that's long-term.
Okay.
ADSEG is like 3 months or less.
Okay, well, that sounds like an awful long time. How long were you there?
3 months for this incident.
Okay. And the rules that you had broken were that you had been in a fight, supposedly?
I was defending myself.
But that's what they interpreted as.
Well, no, we participated in a riot. Mm-hmm. That's how they wrote it up to keep us in there for 90 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's very, you know, a very normal way to punish people, mm-hmm, especially mm-hmm. trans people.
And what's it like to be in the hole?
23 hours of the day, except for 1 hour for 3 times a week, you are in your cell. So
totally by yourself.
Yes. So for 4 days out of the week, you are in your cell with your cellmate for 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And the only time you leave your cell is for a shower or 1 hour of rec, which is in a dog kennel, 3 times a week for 1 hour.
Okay. Thank you for reading that that section. You were in a few different detention centers of various sorts. Can you tell us, you know, which prisons were worse or which better than others? It sounded like Corcoran was better than this place that was supposed to be. Salinas Valley was supposed to be better for
training. Okay, Corcoran wasn't better, but it was. It was like the officers didn't really care about us girls. And like Salinas Valley, they focused on us. Mm-hmm. And they would tell us we can't wear earrings. They would tell us we can't wear makeup. They would tell us we can't wear too tight pants. And they would tell us that we can't wear, that we can't alter the male tank tops so that our breasts don't hang out from the side. And it was like they were, this is supposed to be a place where it's a hub where we're supposed to be able to be ourselves freely, and this is the place that was telling us that we couldn't alter the male clothes that they only allowed us to get so that we would feel feminine and we would have the life experience as living women, as women, which is a federal law. It's not like a state law.
You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are photojournalist Kristen Lissigan, author of The Women of San Quentin, Sole Murder of Transgender Women in Male Prisons. She's joined by one of the women profiled in that book, Daniela Tavake. Kristen, as bad as Daniela's experiences were, her story is rosy compared to those of the other 8 women in the book. Is that fair to say?
Well, I would never use that word.
I apologize.
No, it's all right.
I think it's probably much worse than we know. It's probably very hard for us to imagine even what Daniela has been through. But the backgrounds of the women are very, very different. Daniela experienced a lot of abuse out in society when she was a child. And also she wasn't being... she wasn't understood. People didn't want to make an effort to understand who she was. And so for her, she was fortunate to meet someone inside of prison that actually understood her. And so she had a different experience. She was also, I guess, fortunate to meet other trans people and other gay people. But for many people... many trans people, they don't meet other people within the LGBTQI community inside prison.
Sure. So I want you... You've got another excerpt prepared for us, right, Kristen? This is from...
I answer the question you just asked? I think the difference between me and a lot of the women that are profiled in the book is I was... abused sexually from the age of 4 until the age of 14. And I promised myself at 14 that I would never be a victim. And I was one of the women that was in prison that didn't allow a man to control me and then allow a man to take advantage of me. And I would pick up a weapon or I would like physically fight them. And I was, like, my reputation preceded me. And I didn't like being this person, nor did I like being the woman that would fight and known for that. Mm-hmm. But it was something that helped me survive in prison.
Yeah.
It wasn't something I wanted to do. It was something that was of a necessity until I met my current boyfriend. And as my best friend for a whole year before he became my boyfriend, he nurtured that woman and he taught that woman to be gentle and that it's okay to be to get your feelings hurt. And it's okay to cry, and it's okay to it's okay to be feminine and be the woman that I was born to be. So I think that's the difference between me and the women and profiled in this book and their experience in prison. Like, some women is not, it's just not in them to, like,
to fight back or to stand the ground.
Yeah, and it's just, and believe me, it would have been easier to just accept it, and but it wasn't, like, it wasn't, it was, like, it used to steal my soul.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I want to get back to your story a little bit more in a minute, if you'd like. But I want to ask you, Kristen, about, you said the first time you were allowed into a prison, actually, was when you met Shiloh, whose last name is escaping me right
Quine.
Now. Shiloh Quine, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell us a little bit about that? And she's famous for her own reason.
She's now, yeah. Well, she doesn't get to see any of that fame at all. And also people are deciding...
Because she's still in prison.
She's still in prison. She's in... One of the reasons why probably she won the settlement with the state or with the Department of Corrections, because now she is going to be the first trans woman to receive surgery and be moved to a female prison or a prison for women. And... sorry, now I'm losing it now. Not losing it, but I'm
losing your
question?
Place. Well, do you want to read this? You have a section to read from the book about her, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to read that?
Okay. So she's in prison for she's convicted of murder, because she's in for life without the possibility of parole. Her case was very different from another case where Michelle Norsworthy actually did win a settlement also to be allowed to have reassignment surgery, but the Department of Corrections in California let her out on parole instead.
Okay.
Yeah. One of Shiloh Quine's fondest wishes, she told me in her letters, was to be photographed, since the only photos she had of herself were taken back in the days when she looked like a man. She has been incarcerated for almost 35 of her 55 years, with no visitors during the last 15 of those years. 2 years into our letter correspondence, on a Sunday morning in December 2014, I drove to Mule Creek State Prison to visit Shiloh. It was a strange feeling knowing I would be the first person to visit her in so many years. It would also be my first time inside an American prison. Mule Creek, just outside the town of Ione in Amador County, is a farming and tourist area 2 hours' drive east of the Bay Area. Shiloh and Kenny, her cellmate, had both been transferred there recently. They had written that Mule Creek seemed safer compared to the abuse and hostility they had experienced in other prisons. Despite my dishearteningly unsuccessful attempt to see Ashley Diamond in a Georgia prison 2 months earlier, I felt optimistic. A prison guard had explained on the phone that I did not need an appointment, since I was already approved to visit Shiloh. Still, as it is the way with the prison system, the compound could be on lockdown, and Shiloh did not know I was coming. I had followed the visitor's guide carefully, making sure that I was wearing a bra with no metal, that the bra wouldn't show under my blouse, and that I was dressed in ordinary, non-provocative clothing. I had read about women who, after driving for hundreds of miles and waiting for hours lined up outside the prison, were refused visitation because part of the bra was showing. To my surprise, there was no line of visitors waiting to get into Mule Creek. I walked into the visitors' processing building, where a female officer greeted me and said, "How can I help you today?" I thought I had prepared well for the visit, but I had forgotten Charlotte's inmate number in the car. The car was away with my husband, who couldn't park on the premises. The officer grumpily reprimanded me. It was important to bring the number if I wanted to see someone. Otherwise, she said, she had to search through thousands of names. But then she asked, "What is his name?" "It's a woman, actually," I said, and felt a shiver tussle my whole upper body. She answered, "Ma'am, for your information, this is a male prison. Everyone in here is male." I found it difficult to use Charlotte's legal male name, but though I felt intimidated, I managed to reply, "I know this is a male prison. Please search for Rodney Quine, but for your information, she is a woman." I went on to ask if she could kindly search for Kenneth Kent, Charlotte's best friend and cellmate too, and if it would be okay for me to see him that day as well. To my surprise, she said, "Yes, ma'am. You can come out and walk back in here again and call for Kent later." She found Charlotte's inmate number and handed me a piece of paper with a passport photo of a woman with thick, long black hair to take with me to another building. I passed through a walk-through scanner and then several gates, waiting for each one to open and hearing a clang shut behind me. I found Compound A. The visitation room was filled with people. Half of them were wearing light blue shirts and loose dark blue pants stamped with Mule Creek State Prison in large yellow letters. Things felt strangely calm, except for the thumping of my heart inside my chest.
That's Kristen Lissigan, author of The Women of San Quentin, Soul Murder of Transgender Women in Male Prisons. Reading from the book, you're listening to Out on the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. We're also joined by one of the women profiled in that book, Daniela Tavake. Soul Murder of Transgender Women is in the title. Kristen, what does soul murder mean, and where did that term come from?
Well, the first traces that I found of the term being used was from Sigmund Freud's subject. His name was Schreber, and he was writing about soul murder. And the other person at that time was a fellow Norwegian, the playwright Henrik Ibsen. And he explained that the the destruction mm-hmm. of life mm-hmm. and love in a human being. So it means, so my husband is a psychiatrist, child psychiatrist, and he helped me to find this title. And the term isn't used very much, but there was a psychoanalyst called Schengold, and he wrote a book called Soul Murder, and he wrote a lot about child abuse and how you taking away somebody's life.
And a will to live and a will to be enjoy life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Excuse me. You also mention, I think it's in the book, that something about the high incarceration rates of transgender people and transgender people of color specifically. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, it is, if we look at the population of people in prison in general in the United States, then we know that there is a very, very high percentage of people, African American men, and other people of color. And so this is the same with transgender people. There is a high, very high percentage of LGBTQI people in general in prisons. And the explanation for that is poverty, racism, hate crimes, people get, 50% of all homeless youth in this United States are identifying within the LGBTQI.
Now, we only have a few minutes left, so I'm going to apologize. I'm going to sort of ask you two questions at once, Daniela. But you were in and out of prison a few times, and when you were released the last time, you had, what happened the last time you were in prison that changed how you felt and said, you know, I'm not going back?
I was finally me, and I was finally transitioning into the woman that I've always wanted to be. And the difference now from the three times before this time that I got released was I stifled myself. And I once believed that I could only be a woman and loved and respected as a woman and treated as a woman in prison. And once one believes that, their soul resonates towards where they can be that woman. And the difference now is I know who I am, and I really don't care what the next person thinks or says about me. And it may hurt, and it may make me want to punch them in their mouth, but the difference is I don't do all that, and I just allow the hurt and allow the disappointment to be processed and just move on. And
you're getting some help from some organizations in the Bay Area now?
Yes, I was helped originally from VRS and Service Connect, and it's in San Mateo County, and it's a work program where they give you an opportunity to work for 90 days and you build a resume either in catering or which is the restaurant business, and they teach you every aspect of the restaurant business, as in customer service, back of the house, front of the house, driving. I was the driver, and they teach you, give you training and warehouse work.
And so that's what you're doing now?
No, right now I work for Cheesecake Factory in Palo Alto.
Okay.
As a server.
Thank you very much. One last question before we go. Quickly, I want to ask, you mentioned earlier I think it was called the Transgender and Intersex Women in Prison Project or something like that. Did I get the name right?
Transgender and Intersex Justice Project.
So that's a place people could go to find out more information.
Yes.
And I will try to get that organization name right and put it on our website, outonthebay.org.
Yeah.
Okay. Daniela Tavaki and Christine Lissigan, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Kristen's book is The Women of San Quentin, Soul Murder of Transgender Women in Male Prisons. You can find information about the book online. Just search for the title, The Women of San Quentin. It's also available on Amazon, at Books Inc. and other Bay Area bookstores, and probably wider than that. If you missed part of our discussion or just want to hear it all again, it will be posted on our website, outinthebay.org, by about 8 o'clock this evening. Well, dear listeners, it's with some sadness, I must tell you, that Out in the Bay is going away, at least for a while. Marilyn Pittman and I have been producing the show for 11 years now. We'll be taking a break, a sabbatical, if you will. On my part, I have had some family needs come up that I really need to attend to. I have to devote time to that. But, you know, after 8 years, we've loved it. It's been an incredible experience meeting people like in the studio right now. It's been a joy. But we'll be taking a break. I need some creative break. I don't know if we're going to return or what form if we do, but go to our website and keep posted. You can still hear our past shows on our website, outonthebay.org, and some of our favorites. And the next 2 weeks, Christmas Eve, we'll be airing our Liberace feature, so 7 o'clock next Thursday. Tune in for that. Spend the holidays with Liberace. You can't go wrong. And then on New Year's Eve at 7 p.m., Thursday the 31st, we'll be playing our 10-year anniversary special that has highlights from our first 10 years. It was recorded in front of a live audience earlier this year. Out in the Bay is independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. Special thanks tonight to Kyrie Whitsett, who produced tonight's show and helped last week as well. Out in the Bay, we thank KALW for helping the show grow over the past 11 years and for studio use, and tonight's engineer, Debbie Kennedy. Thank you so much, Debbie, for all your help over the years. On our website, outonthebay.org, you can hear free podcasts and download Stitcher to hear our show and other radio programs on your cell phone and other devices, outinthebay.org. Thanks again for all your past support, and thanks, as always, for listening. I'm Eric Jansen. We are out of time.